So why do we hear nothing about jihad and Judaism? Jihad is, after all, a word that is much in the news and seems to be characteristic of a certain approach to faith. And in order to understand the way in which it does or does not apply to our own faith, we have to clarify what it would mean to apply jihad to Judaism. And I'm not talking in military terms, which is one of the three definitions that I've heard for this term. Judaism did have the equivalent of holy war. It was in biblical times, under Joshua, to conquer the land of Canaan. But in the past several thousand years, that is not an idea or a concept that has lived in our tradition, and our tradition is better for it. Even though wars of self-defense are permitted and even mandated in the Jewish tradition, you don't hear rabbis speaking about them as holy wars, because it seems so oxymoronic, so self-contradictory, so distasteful. If the idea is internal spiritual struggle, well, Judaism is filled with internal spiritual struggle. Each day, there is a confessional in the morning service. Each year, there is Yom Kippur. A Jew who doesn't struggle with him or herself is not fully a Jew. But then there is this third meaning that teaches us something about this morning's parsha. And that is the idea that you wage a struggle for the rightness of your own faith against other faiths. It is what we might know as the evangelical impulse. The idea that because you are in possession of a truth, you must persuade the rest of the world that your truth is the only truth. This is an impulse that has been around for thousands of years. And to gauge the success of this impulse, I will just mention that there are still thousands of faiths in the world. And in this sense, Judaism rejects the idea that there is spiritual struggle. And the way that we know that and the alternative that Judaism believes in is clear from this parsha. We learn from our bat mitzvah this morning that the rabbis in Pirkei Avot talk about struggles that are for the sake of heaven, l'shem shamayim, and struggles that are not for the sake of heaven, lo l'shem shamayim. And the struggle that the rabbis pick, l'shem shamayim, to which we will return, are the struggles between Hillel and Shammai, the debates in the academy and among their disciples. Now, they had lots of choices for struggles that are not in the name of heaven. I mean, think about even the Israelites traveling through the desert. They struggled for meat. They struggled for water. They struggled more than once against the leadership of Moses. But they don't pick those. They say Korach's struggle is the one that's not for the sake of heaven. Why? Why Korach? Why not when they yelled at God that they didn't have enough meat to eat? That clearly wasn't for the sake of heaven. Why would the rabbis pick the struggle of Korach? And the answer is because it was in part a spiritual struggle. The rabbis say, you know what Korach used to do? Moses would say, every garment, every tzitzit has to have a fringe of blue. And Korach would say, what if the entire garment is made of blue? Or Moses would say, you have to put a mezuzah so that you'll have a passage of the Torah on the doorpost of your house. And Korach would say, what if the house is filled with scrolls of the law, with Torah? Do you still need a mezuzah? In other words, he was taking what was ostensibly a power struggle and trying to spiritualize it. And the reason that the rabbi said that it wasn't for the sake of heaven was because they wanted to emphasize that struggles that appear to be for the sake of heaven aren't always for the sake of heaven. How do we know that Moses' was? What is the sign that your struggle is for the sake of heaven? Do you remember what Moses does when the dispute breaks out? Korach has two confederates named Datan and Abiram. Moses asks them to come over for talks, and they refuse. Why do they refuse? Because part of talking is listening. And they don't want to listen. They want to win. The impulse to have someone else adopt your faith is the impulse to win, not the impulse to listen. You can hear it in the phraseology. The spiritual struggle suggests that there is a force of light and a force of darkness, and the force of light is going to win. It is interesting to note that nowhere in Jewish writings until the time of the Messiah is there ever a suggestion that the entire world should just become Jewish. Now, why is that? You might say because the rabbis are realistic. But believe me, there are lots of things in Jewish writings that aren't so realistic. There are lots of dreams and visions and ideas. But nowhere is there this notion that we're going to convince everyone to be Jewish because we have the truth, and if they just listen to our arguments, they'll know. And I would say it is not because our tradition is less convinced of its merit, but because there is in the heart of people who feel secure in their faith a spiritual humility, a willingness to believe that other people have a perspective and even sometimes a truth. You don't have to do it now. In fact, I'm going to ask you not to do it now. But later on, read the passage that I brought for today's study source from the Maharal of Prague, where he talks about how the great rabbis would read the books of the philosophers, even though those books contradicted what the rabbis believed. Why? Why do you want to sit down with something that contradicts your belief? Because truth exists everywhere. Because if you get on the internet and you only read people who agree with you, you're arrogant. Because you think that all truth resides with your position. If you only get newspapers and magazines that parrot exactly what you believe, you'll learn nothing new. You remember the story of Rabbi Meir and his teacher, the only rabbi who left the Jewish tradition, Acher, Rabbi Elisha ben Abuya, and Rabbi Meir continued to study with him. And when he was asked why, he said, it's like a pomegranate. You take the seeds and you throw the rind away. In other words, this is still someone who has something to teach. I know that much of what he says I must reject. But Rabbi Meir, one of the great rabbis of the Talmud, had the spiritual humility to say, I can learn from people who oppose my view. That's why Hillel and Shammai are the dispute that for L'shem Shammayim. Because Hillel and Shammai, both of them, contended with each other, talked to each other, listened to each other. Zeh v'zeh divrei Elohim chayim, says the Talmud. The words of both, even when they contradict each other, are words of the living God. Because God isn't only on your side, or only in your words, or even only with your tradition. And that's why we read not just from our own sages, but sages and scholars of other tradition. It's why Maimonides read Arabic philosophers and read Aristotle. It's why in our own day, there are interdenominational and interreligious conferences where people of goodwill and deep faith talk to one another and listen to one another. In fact, says the Talmud, the reason that Hillel's positions were preferred more often than Shammai's had less to do with the fact that Hillel was right than the fact that Hillel was humble. He taught his disciples, listen to Shammai's positions before you express your own. It was humility that made him right, instead of rightness that made him arrogant. This is not only a lesson in spirit, it's a lesson in family and in friendship and in relationship. How often have you gone into a conversation so certain of what it is you want to say and so deep in the belief that you hold that it is actually not possible for someone else to make a point? And you don't listen, you just wait. Soon they will stop talking and I will tell them the truth. But that arrogance is precisely what Judaism rejects and what Moses, in his invitation to Datan and Aviram, counsels us against. There is one God, but there are many truths. There is one God, but there are many paths. There is one Torah, but there are endless interpretations. And so both inside of the Jewish tradition and outside of the Jewish tradition, the extent to which we reject listening is the extent to which we wall ourselves up in a narrow and a small place. You don't have to agree. And not all opinions deserve the same respect. But you don't know which opinions deserve respect until you hear them. So, I urge you, next time you open the paper, read that editorial from the person you never read, because you don't agree with them. Listen to that rabbi whose position you reject, because she or he might still have something to teach you. Listen to that person in your family or among your friends whom you don't listen to because you know they're wrong. Moshe knew that Datan and Abiram were not going to be the leaders of the Jewish people. He knew Korach was not going to be the leader of the Jewish people. He knew that. He was Moses. He didn't have to invite them to come over and talk. All he had to do was ask God. He knew. But if Moses could invite them to talk, al achat kama v'kama, how much more is it true that we need to listen to others? You know one interpretation about why Korach was swallowed by the earth? I mean, of all the things that could have happened to this guy, in the middle of the desert, why open up the earth? Because, according to one rabbi, it was a lesson in humility. To be humble is to be low. And if you raise yourself up so high that you don't have to listen, what is the appropriate punishment? To go so low that no one can hear you. It's a fanciful interpretation, but it's based on an important idea. The Jewish tradition has much of importance to say to the world. But the world has some important things to say to us too. It is in the tradition of Moshe to speak out, to believe, but also to listen. And if we do, then we might in the end merit what is true of Hillel and Shammai, which is that even when we don't agree, even when we argue, even when we fight with one another, that our fights will be l'shem shamayim, that they will be for the sake of heaven, and that they will be the sort of elemental struggle, struggle over first principles and important things that the rabbis say will always endure. Because each of us grasps a small part of the truth, and only by sharing with one another will we as individuals and as a community emerge whole. Shabbat Shalom.